Nugget by Chris Barber in 1969. I'll be back at the usual time of 5 next week, but now with more from Chris Barber, here's Claire Martin.
Hello. On today's programme, the second instalment of concert music from trad jazz legend Chris Barber, who celebrates his 65th year as a band leader. His set includes his take on the Miles Davis classic, All Blues. The big Chris Barber Band, and more from that set later on in the show. Plus, I'm joined by Kevin Legendre for our regular feature, Now's the Time, when we turn back time and relive a classic album of recent times. Hi, Kevin. What have you dug out from the vaults this month?
One of Herbie Hancock's most ambitious and eclectic albums from 2001, Future to Future, which, to refresh your memory, sounds like this.
Herbie Hancock from the album Future to Future, and more from Herbie later on the programme. Well, first up, a brand new release on the Jelly Mold Jazz label from the young Anglo-German collaborative project called Paragon. Circa is one of this year's most enchanting new releases, and Paragon's music is described as jazz that's reborn in the 21st century without any strong roots or allegiances. With Peter Ewald leading the group on sax, let's hear the track Circa d'Et. Thank you. taken from their new release called Circa. That was the track Circa Day Tea, played by Paragon. And you can hear Paragon play in the UK when they tour throughout October and November, with their official album launch next month on Halloween night. That's Jazz Live at the Crypt on October the 31st, and that's at St Giles' Church in London. At just 19 years old, singer, sax player and trumpeter Andrea Motis is currently taking Spain by storm, and her partnership with saxophonist Joan Chamaua is considered to be a revelation in Catalan jazz. She's a YouTube sensation with over 200,000 hits on some of the songs. Motis has been likened to Norah Jones, and indeed her vocal sound is very confectionery, but her phrasing is sophisticated and she swings on both vocals and trumpet. Let's hear it on the live version of a standard written in the 1920s by Walter Donaldson and Gus Kahn, Love Me or Leave Me.
Love me or leave me, don't let me be lonely. You won't believe me, but I love you only. I'd rather be lonely than happy with some. Right time for kissing, but night time is my time for just reminiscing, forgetting instead of forgetting with somebody else. There'll be no one unless it's someone is you. I intend to be independently.
Andrea Motis on vocals and trumpet with Joanne Chamorro on saxophone, taken from her debut album called Feeling Good, and that was Love Me or Leave Me. You can hear Andrea at the Pizza Express Jazz Club in Soho when she has a run of dates from September the 30th to October the 1st. Something brand new on the ACT label now, which is due to be released on September the 29th, from a European jazz supergroup featuring from Sweden, Lars Danielsson, who's playing bass and cello, fellow countryman and former EST drummer Magnus Ostrom, Armenian pianist of the moment Tigran, and British guitarist John Paricelli. On Libretto 2, Danielsson and his quartet explore new musical dimensions at the borders between chamber jazz and classic and European folk. Let's hear them play the track called Swedish Song. Thank you. Brilliant playing by bassist and cellist Lars Danielsson with the tune Swedish Song, taken from his new release Libretto 2, which is out at the end of this month. Both Scottish and international musicians will be getting together very soon to be part of the 16th Isla Jazz Festival, which runs from September the 12th to the 14th on the enchanting island of Isla. This year's lineup includes some new names to me, such as the charismatic singer and pianist Champion Fulton, who's the talk of Manhattan at the moment, alongside some well-established jazz names like Tommy Smith, who plays with Brian Kellock, Trio AAB and Keith Nichols. Well, on the final night, that's the 14th, you can hear this man with his Future Past trio. It's saxophonist Tony Kofi with Jubilation for Boo. Tony Kofi with Jubilation, and you can hear Tony as part of this September's Isla Jazz Festival. And for more information on the event, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. Time now for our regular monthly feature, Now's the Time, with Kevin Legendre. Kevin's chosen Herbie Hancock's 2001 album, Future to Future. There's much talk about Herbie these days. You may have heard me playing some tracks from his box set, The Warner Brothers Years, 1969 to 1972. You've chosen something a bit more neglected.
Yeah, we're going back to 2001 with Future to Future, which was an album that I have to say I wasn't entirely convinced by when it came out. I thought it was a bit top-heavy, just full of ideas, full of contributors. There was a lot going on. And it's a classic case for me of an album that's actually aged very well over time, and the quality of the songwriting has really shone through.
Why didn't you perhaps hear that quality initially then?
The songs had to grow on me. I just needed more time with them. And also, I think there was such expectation and such hype to a certain extent at the time about what this album would deliver, because it was the reunion of Herbie and Bill Laswell, who produced Future Shock and Rocket, which were great Herbie moments from the 80s. And I just thought that there would be more of a focus, I suppose, on the two of them together and what they could produce. But the thing about this album is that it has a lot of other producers and beat makers involved, notably Carl Craig. So they're branching into areas of techno that they hadn't done before, obviously, because it just didn't really exist at the time. And also you've got more vocalists involved this time around, notably Chaka Khan on one track. So it's kind of Herbie's Cecil B. DeMille cast of many moment, and at the time I found it too much, but I've just grown with it over the years.
Well, let's hear a track to give us a flavour of it, and the first track we're going to play is called Kibero Part 2. Thank you. Kibero from Future to Future, and we're talking about this album. Kevin, Gigi on vocals there. I mean, it does sound, it's a real sort of mix of many things going on.
Carl Craig's programming, beat making, Herbie on the keys, and then Gigi, this incredible vocalist from Ethiopia, who had made her breakthrough a few years before that on an album which featured Herbie. So there's the Bill Laswell connection. She was working with Bill Laswell too. What I really like about that track is the fact that you get the sense that this is very much a track from the 90s and the millennium, with the way that Carl Craig has set up the beats. But there's also a very, very strong flavour of Herbie circa 1970 with Mavandishi and Sextant, the way that he's playing the Rhodes, that kind of very African, very atmospheric feel that he's managed to cook up there. And it's actually a really, really hypnotic track. Mm. If you play that a few times, it will just stay in your head.
What interested me when I was looking and researching this album before I saw you today, some of the reviews I read online, and one of the great comments someone's put here, I think it was on one of the CD reviews, not the Herbie your mums grew up on, you know. This is the Herbie that's pushing the envelope again. This is the Herbie that's always trying to find new sounds, new things. So perhaps when you first heard it, you didn't appreciate he was constantly trying to move on. He's also got a spoken word. He's got poetry by Diana Bryant on this. And Tony Williams, a drummer that he'd worked with multiple times throughout his career, he's sampled on this, so he's got some. I mean, it's really interesting stuff, isn't it?
It's really, really multifaceted. It's just going off in all these different directions, and I think that was the thing which was just a bit overwhelming for me initially. But the more I listened to it, the more I realised that this isn't just about Herbie's relationship with Bill Laswell, kind of renewing the whole jazz meets hip hop pop thing that they did with Rocket. It's almost a kind of summary of many, many episodes in Herbie's career kind of been squeezed into this one space. And I actually think it does work now. Sort of 10 years after the event, you listen to it and you think they wrote some good songs and there's very, very good playing. The other thing as well is that I actually interviewed Herbie when this came out, and he said that one of the things that he wanted to do on this album specifically was get away from jazz improvisation, from it being too jazz. And if you listen to the album, one of the key things is that by his standards, he doesn't play that much. He doesn't take loads and loads of solos.
Okay, yeah.
It's really about the songwriting and the arrangements.
I mean, this is his 43rd album by this stage. You'd wonder what to do at that stage anyway. He's so prolific, isn't he?
Incredibly prolific, but also just really, really curious and interested in the development of modern music, the development of popular music. I mean, one of his great sources of inspiration is Stevie Wonder, as well as Miles Davis and lots of jazz musicians. And I think he was just fascinated by what people were doing with programming, beat making, what was happening in techno, what was happening in electronica. And he just wanted to go into that world and see what happened.
And do you think he was also appealing to the fans that had gone crazy for Rocket, which was huge, wasn't it? I mean, it absolutely catapulted him into pop status stardom. Was he still trying to keep them on board, do you think?
He's always had his finger on popular culture, as well as art music, jazz, classical music. He is very, very interested in what people dance to, what people listen to on the radio. As I say, Stevie Wonder is a great source of inspiration. And I think certainly on some of these tracks, you hear these great hooks. We're going to listen to a track now where you've got this lovely synthesizer hook right at the beginning, which kind of defines the whole piece within the first few bars. And this is a great example of a song with a really strong chorus, a very beautiful vocal performance from somebody called Imani Azuri, which I think is one of Herbie's great pop moments, but also has this really, really brilliant soprano sax playing from Wayne Shorter, where he's absolutely pushing the kind of emotional intensity of this music with some really screaming high notes in places which kind of knock you back. Yet this is a very, very beautiful song that we can all sing.
Let's hear it now. This is Be Still from Future to Future. Thank you. That was Be Still, taken from Herbie Hancock's Future to Future CD, which I'm discussing with Kevin Legendre. That is very hooky and feel good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hanging on to the summer, aren't we, with that one?
It's a really beautiful, uplifting song. It's very ethereal. It really makes you feel good. I mean, the other thing as well, which we didn't mention, is this album came out in September 2001, so it's just after 9/11. And I remember seeing Herbie in concert and him actually talking about the importance of the event, because they did a Future to Future tour shortly after the release of the
DVD,
album.
And the DVD, didn't they? I remember seeing that. Yeah,
and there's something about this album, you know, which has this very spiritual feel to it. The lyric is all about kind of serenity as well, which obviously it was written before 9/11, but it kind of resonates with the state of the world at that time as well. You know, there's just awful event which really shocked people, and Herbie in concert talked about that and talked about the need for more tolerance and more peace and more solidarity in the world even before 9/11, which I thought was very significant.
How did the critics review this CD, this 43rd release?
I remember people being mostly in favour. Some people, like myself, I was quite divided. I think everybody was excited by the fact that he'd done this anyway.
Mm.
After, I think, two or three acoustic albums, because he'd recorded 1 Plus 1 with Wayne Shorter in the late 90s, and the Gershwin's World record as well, that he'd actually gone back to the hardware and the technology and the keyboards and synthesizers, so... Yeah, on the whole, the reviews were good, but myself and a few other people did have some reservations.
So the last piece we're going to play is called Virtual Horn. Let's talk about that.
So to me, this is actually one of these fascinating examples of Herbie's history and the history of jazz kind of coming back into his contemporary world. Because on this track, so Wayne is again featured, this time on tenor sax, along with Jack DeJohnette, you know, amazing drummer, and Charnette Moffett, an amazing acoustic bass player. But when I listen to this track, I hear Weather Report. I kind of think of Wayne with Joe Zawinul in Weather Report. Having the acoustic bass in there is really important, because it gives it another feel. It kind of goes back to the original Weather Report with Miroslav Virtus playing it. But there's just something about the way that he's playing the keyboards, just the rhythm, the whole kind of floating aspect of it, which makes me think of Weather Report in the early 70s.
Is this recording something you can listen to from beginning to end? Has it got a flow to it, or is it a dippy in and out
thing? No, see, that was one of the problems for me when it first came out, is that I didn't feel that I could listen to it from start to finish. If I were given the responsibility, the ultimate responsibility of kind of producing Herbie Hancock, which obviously I'd never do, then I'd say to him, if you wanted to make this a perfect album, just take a few tracks out.
Too much good stuff. All right, well, let's hear Virtual Hornets, and thanks very much for sharing this CD with me, because I'd not heard it, so it was a real ear and eye opener for me. Kevin Legendre, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Here's Herbie Hancock then with Virtual Hornets. Virtual Hornets from Herbie Hancock's Future to Future, and our thanks to Kevin Ajonra for bringing that record to our attention. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. Next up is a BBC Introducing track which was sent in via the BBC Introducing Uploader. BBC Introducing brings together all of the BBC supporters of undiscovered and unsigned music. So if you're making music, you can upload your best tracks and get your music heard by the BBC. Three musicians who have taken advantage of this initiative are guitarist David Preston, bassist Kevin Glasgow and drummer Laurie Lowe. They formed their trio back in 2011 and share a love of improvisation, intricate composition, rhythm and accessible melodies. So let's hear them play David's composition, Silvertide.
Thank you.
From the trio Preston Glasgow Low, that was Silvertide, which was sent into the BBC introducing Uploader, and it's made its way onto the Jazz Lineup airwaves. For more information on how you can send in your own music, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. On Sunday the 14th of September at 3:30 at the impressive Cadogan Hall in London, there's a special 70th anniversary celebration of Jazz at the Philharmonic. Impresario Norman Grant presented his first ever Jazz at the Philharmonic on the 2nd of July back in 1944 at the Philharmonic Auditorium in Los Angeles. The concept of putting a mix of small bands and singers together and concluding with a dozen players in an impromptu jam session was a hit from the outset. And right up until the 1980s, Jazz at the Philharmonic toured the world featuring many of the biggest names in jazz. The lineup for the Cadogan Hall event features a selection of young jazz talent alongside some of the biggest names on the London jazz scene. Well, let's hear from a lady who was taken under the wing of Grant's, the magnificent Ella Fitzgerald. And here she is, in her own inimitable style, swinging and singing, Take the A-Train.
Sugar Hill, way up in Harlem. If you miss the A train, you'll find you've missed the quickest way to Harlem. Hurry, get on, now it's coming. Listen to those rails a-thrumming. All aboard, get on the A train. Soon you will be on Sugar Hill in Harlem.
Thank you.
But if you don't know about Baba, you must take the A train to go to Sugar Hill, way up in Harlem. You must take the A train to go to Sugar Hill, way up in Harlem. If you miss the A train, you miss the quickest way to Harlem. Hurry, get on board, it's coming. Listen to those rails are thrumming. All aboard, get on the A train. Soon you will be on Sugar Hill in Harlem. Stop is Harlem. Next stop, Harlem. Come on, get aboard the A Stop is Harlem, take the A train.
Ella Fitzgerald, who else from the album Ella Fitzgerald sings the Duke Ellington songbook, and that was Take the A Train. A celebration of jazz at the Philharmonic will be on Sunday, September the 14th at Cadogan Hall. And for more information, check out the link on the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin, on FM, online and on digital radio. Well, you may have heard the first part of our concert set from trombone legend Chris Barber a few weeks ago. Well, now it's time for the second half of that set from Chris, who's celebrating his 65th year as a band leader. Originally inspired by the King Oliver Creole Jazz Band, Chris formed his first New Orleans band back in 1949, aged just 19. Having performed over 10,000 concerts and thousands of recordings, Chris Barber keeps marching on. And in 2001, he extended his band by adding three more musicians and formed the Big Chris Barber Band. Well, Jazz Lineup recorded this band on Sunday, the 10th of August, at the Theatre Brecheniog as part of the Brecken Jazz Festival 2014. And the lineup features Bob Hunt on trombone and trumpet, Peter Rudforth on trumpet and flugelhorn, Mike Magic Henry on trumpet and cornet, Richard Exels playing clarinet, alto and baritone sax, Amy Roberts plays clarinet, alto and tenor sax and flute, Bert Brandsma plays alto and tenor sax, Joe Fala on banjo and guitar, Jackie Flavel on string bass and bass guitar, and John Watson's playing the drums. Of course, all led by Chris Barber on the trombone. They open the set with the Miles Davis classic All Blues, the Big Chris Barber Band.
Dean Firm, Richard Exall. Guitar by Joe Fowler. Thank you so much, sir. That was, of course, Petite Fleur, what we refer to in the trade as a medley of our hit. We only had one, you see. I had all the rest, you see. But there you are. At this time, we'd like to go to one last time to a piece by Duke Ellington, one of our great favourites of his, and it's called Rockin' in Rhythm.
Rockin' in Rhythm by the Big Chris Barber Band, ending tonight's concert set recorded at the Theatre Brechenjog as part of the Brecken Jazz Festival 2014. For more info on Chris Barber and for all the titles played on this week's programme, check out the Jazz Lineup page via the Radio 3 website. Well, that's almost the end of this week's Jazz Lineup, but there's plenty more jazz on BBC Radio 3 with Geoffrey Smith's Jazz Tonight at midnight, and Jazz on 3 on Monday nights with Jez Nelson. And this week he presents music from Leeds-based guitarist Chris Sharkey, who's performing with his trio, Shiver. And on next week's Jazz Lineup, a special concert set featuring the music from saxophonist Ravi Coltrane. But to end today's show, I'd like to play a track to celebrate and remember the short but creative life of Brighton saxophonist Ian Price. He very sadly passed away in August after a very short illness. He's one of the most loved and respected musicians in the town, and in recent years have become more widely known across the country, touring with Terry Seabrook's band Cubana Bop. Well, let's hear Ian now in fine form on tenor sax from the album Near Awakening by John Donaldson's Unity Band, with John on piano, Simon Thorpe on double bass and Tristan Banks on drums, playing a piece by Becky M. Seleku, whose music Ian had a real passion for. This is My Passion. Till next time from me, Claire Martin. Bye-bye. Thank you.
My Passion by Becky M. Selecku, performed by John Donaldson's Unity, and ending this week's edition of Jazz Lineup. The programme was produced in Glasgow by Sushil K. Dade. As Claire Martin mentioned, you can find track listings for the music in the programme on the Jazz Lineup page of the BBC Radio 3 website. And this coming Monday's edition of Jazz on 3, which she also mentioned, is later than usual at 11:45 on Monday night. Hello, I'm John Shea. This is BBC Radio 3. This Saturday evening, it's 7 o'clock. Time to go live to the Royal Albert Hall for this evening's prom. It's presented by Donald MacLeod.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Last night, the Berlin Philharmonic raised the Royal Albert Hall roof with Rachmaninoff and Stravinsky. Tonight, for their second appearance at the 2014 BBC Proms, a totally different experience. We're going to hear what the opera director Peter Sellers describes as one of the most powerful acts of remembrance in human history, Bach's St. Matthew Passion. In Peter Sellers' staging of this transformative ritual, Mark Padmore sings the role of the evangelist and Christian Gerheer the words of Christ in a stellar cast of singers, which also includes Camilla Tilling, Magdalena Kozina, Topi Lehtipu and Eric Owens, with choristers from Wells and Winchester Cathedrals, the Berlin Radio Choir and Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Sir Simon Rattle. Rattle says that during his time as music director in Berlin, this staging of The Passion, first presented in 2010, is the single most important thing we ever did. You can hear Peter Sellers' thoughts on the Matthew Passion and his staging of it during the interval in today's Proms Plus, when he'll be interviewed by Ian Skelly. The Matthew Passion is Bach's longest composition and the most imposing in scale of the performing forces required: vocal soloists, a double chorus and two orchestras. There are three main layers to Bach's conception. The weight of the storytelling is carried by the evangelist, a tenor, together with several other named characters in the story, including, of course, Jesus, a baritone. There's also a sequence of arias and one duet, which provide reflection on the story, and a chorus offer reaction and commentary. Mark Padmore has sung the role of the evangelist many times. I asked what, for him, makes this staging by Peter Sellers special.
I feel that what Peter has given us in this version is to not just allow the Matthew Passion to be a sort of consoling, beautiful piece of music, but actually to say that, you know, it is an exploration of pain and of brutality, of torture, of murder, and that we need to be drawn in to look at what is going on in our world around us, with the piece sort of helping us to do that and make us have to focus on really what it's telling us. And particularly myself as the narrator, I'm not a tour guide saying, you know, here is Mary Magdalene and here is whatever. You know, I'm seeing it, I'm experiencing it. As the evangelist, I take on a lot of the suffering of Jesus because I'm trying to reimagine what it was like. And we hope that people will experience it as for the first time.
The tenor Mark Padmore, who's singing the part of the evangelist in tonight's performance. The first part of The Passion begins with the lamenting prologue picturing the bridegroom, the innocent lamb being sacrificed on the cross. Then we hear how the chief priests and elders conspire to have Jesus arrested. Judas Iscariot agrees to betray him and is given 30 pieces of silver. As Jesus gives the disciples instructions about the Last Supper, observing the feast of the Passover, he predicts that one of them will betray him. They then go to the Garden of Gethsemane, where Christ foretells Peter's denial of him. Judas comes with a mob and with his kiss betrays Christ. One of Christ's followers draws his sword and cuts off the ear of one of the high priest's men, but Jesus tells him that those who wield the sword shall perish by the sword. Peter Sellers' staging couldn't be simpler. Simon Rattle's podium's been moved right back, so he's directly in front of one of the two orchestras, the other one's to his and our right. The two choirs sit on rows of plain wooden boxes to the left and right, on tiers of risers arcing around below the Albert Hall organ. So the main concert platform becomes the space in which the story is acted out in a minimal, very restrained way, using a series of other simple wooden boxes for the performers to sit and stand on. The chorus are not only the crowd, the mass of the people in the story, whether as the chief priests and elders or the mob, they also mirror us, the congregation, and the universality of the faithful. Well, the instrumentalists of the Berlin Philharmonic already on the platform with their leaders, Daniel Stabrava and Daishin Kashimoto, for the first part of Bach's St. Matthew Passion.
Simon Rattle and the members of the Berlin Radio Choir now making their way onto the platform and gathering in the centre around an oblong wooden box larger than the others, which represents at times a table, at times a tomb.
I think we understand in the first chorus that Jesus is dead and that the retelling of the Passion is a reenactment, an act of memorial, an act of understanding, you know, to try and make sense of this story. So the people are in mourning, they're trying to come to terms with what has just happened, and perhaps like the early Christian community, trying to make sense of something where they had great expectations and hopes, ending in this tragic